and claims austerity is a painful but necessary measure. Millions of Brits disagree.
Let's now cross over live to Beirut, where Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement, is speaking. Let's listen in.
The fastest to go ahead. Once again, we meet in the commemoration of International Al-Quds Day, which was called for by Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon him, on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan. The aim of the Imam was that Al-Quds remain alive, that the Palestinian cause remain alive in the conscience, the culture of the Ummah, in the concerns of the Ummah, the priorities of the Ummah, the projects, the jihad, the movements, the struggles of the Ummah. Day by day, it becomes clear the wisdom, the great wisdom behind this decision, which was taken by the Imam, may peace be upon his soul. And the circumstances our region is witnessing, our Ummah is witnessing in these days, in these years, also stress on this need. This year, or in these very same days, we are commemorating Al-Quds Day. At the same time, we had a year which passed. 1 year has passed since the Israeli Zionist brutal criminal aggression in the holy month of Ramadan last year on the Gaza Strip, the people of Gaza, and on the resistance of Gaza. Today, despite all of the difficult circumstances which are invading our region and our Arab and Islamic world, thank God we find millions who responded to the call of Imam Khomeini, be it in Iran, the largest crowds in all of the Iranian cities, or in Arab and Islamic countries, other Arab and Islamic countries, according to the media outlets, Iraq, in Yemen, in Syria, in Jordan, in Al-Qatif, in Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, Tunisia, Mauritania, Sudan, in Gaza, in Turkey, meaning Istanbul, Pakistan, in other European cities. And this is a very important signal which gives us great hope that there are still those who remember Al-Quds. There are still those who remember Al-Quds and who go down to the streets or who meet in certain areas like here, that are like gathering here, for example, to commemorate and raise their voice in support of this cause. However, allow me at the beginning to speak about this matter, to speak about two protests, or to speak about two commemorations specifically. The first in Yemen, those beloved who went down to the streets of Sana'a today to protest in support of Palestine and Al-Quds, despite the continuation of the Saudi American aggression on their country and their cities and their villages, and despite the aggression against everything, people, and also on everything else, on Sana'a, inside Sana'a, on the outskirts of Sana'a. Despite this, tens of thousands, in order not to say hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands came down to protest in support of Al-Quds in Palestine and Gaza and the people of Palestine. Of course, the psychological element, we understand this very well. The Yemeni people sense that the whole world has abandoned them and that the Arab and the Islamic world has abandoned them. And they've also sensed that the people are not, the world isn't divided between those who support and those who reject the war. Rather, those who support the war and aggression in Yemen are those who are silent towards the war. Very small, very limited are those who are against the war. However, despite this very shameful matter, this shameful issue, this did not push the Yemeni people to say we have nothing to do with Palestine or Al-Quds or the people of Palestine. This doesn't concern us. They didn't say this. This deserves from us to express our appreciation. I don't know what to say. It's something great. It's something which we should express as being great. We must stand in front of the will of the Yemeni people, the steadfastness of the Yemeni people, and the loyalty of the Yemeni people. The Yemeni people today express their political and jihadi and ethical commitment towards the Palestinian.
خذلان العالم العربي والإسلامي والعالم في بقية دول العالم هلأ سموها معارضة سموها جماعات مسلحة سموها ثورات شعبية هناك دول ما شاء الله تدعمها بالمال وبالسلاح وبالإعلام وتعقد من أجلها المؤتمرات وجلسات في مجلس الأمن وماكينات دولية وإقليمية ضخمة هلأ البحرين مش هيك اليمن مش هيك يعني في
All right, well, that's Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah speaking there live in Beirut. He is the Secretary General of the Hezbollah Resistance Movement speaking on this International Quds Day. He said a year has passed since Israel's brutal war on Gaza took place. He said that even though in a chaotic region, we find millions have still come out to protest on this International Quds Day. He said, speaking about Yemenis, that they feel that the world has abandoned them, especially the Muslim and Arab world. And he said, yet they support Palestine by coming out onto the streets. Again, that Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, who is speaking there live in Beirut at this time. We're trying to get our translation back on, and whenever that is back on, we will, of course, go back to Sayyid Nasrallah. But let me just remind you again of the pictures that we saw earlier coming out of Yemen itself. People were out there on the streets in their very large numbers, even though the Saudi bombardment of that country continues. People saying that these Saudis are essentially doing the bidding of the Israelis in the region by creating chaos throughout the region and distracting people from the real cause of Palestine, especially on this day, the day of Quds. It seems we will at some point go back to the Sayyid Nasrallah speech or going back to the news. If I could just ask the producer to let me know what's happening. It seems we may be going back to the news at this time. I do apologize for that confusion. On the last Friday of the fasting month of Ramadan, millions of Iranians have marched to mark International Quds Day. Demonstrators took to the streets of the capital, Tehran, and other major cities of Isfahan, Yazd, Shiraz, Kerman, as well as other towns and cities in a show of solidarity with Palestinians. They chanted slogans against Israel and its main ally, the United States, and called for the liberation of all occupied lands. International Quds Day is observed annually across the globe and is acknowledged as a symbol for all oppressed people and nations. The day was announced by the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, to ensure that the Palestinian cause would never be forgotten. Well, I'm being told we do now have a translation of Sayyid Nasrallah's speech. Let's go back to him then.
Around them, 4 years ago, which terrorized them at the beginning of the Arab Spring and the Islamic Awakening and the popular revolutions. Now, in 2015, the situation is different. The Israelis are in a much better situation. Simply speaking, and unfortunately, it's very unfortunate that the Israeli Zionist leaders didn't find in the Ummah of 1.5 billion Muslims, some say now 2 billion Muslims, but we're still speaking according to the old numbers, God knows, but let's stick to the old. In the Ummah of 1.5 billion Muslims, they didn't find any threats. They didn't find anything which threatens the presence or the existence of a small entity in the Palestinian territories that occupies this blessed country, except for some exceptions, which I'll refer to later, they didn't find in the regimes of 1.5 billion Muslims or the armies of the 1.5 billion Muslims or the weapons, the missiles or the warplanes, they didn't find anything which threatens them. They are relaxed and the strategic environment has improved for them. Israel views that everything which is taking place around it serves its interests. Regarding Syria, now regarding the exceptions, I'll speak about this in a separate matter because they spoke about it. Regarding Syria, those who gathered at the Herzliya conference and the Israeli officials before the conference and after the conference, they express their comfort towards what Syria is witnessing, the war, the destruction, the fighting, regardless of the result, what will be the end result in Syria. They are concerned with the end result. They are happy with what is taking place. What it means is that there is a very important country in the axis of resistance and the project of resistance. We have a country that rejects surrendering to American-Israeli hegemony and the conditions of the settlement with Israel for Palestine and the region. This country now is suffering and is weakening and is being destroyed. This is what the Israelis are saying, and they're happy. And so for this reason, some Zionist leaders call for international efforts in order to convince the world to officially recognize the Golan Heights becoming part of Israel. Now they want to pursue diplomatic efforts in this direction under the excuse that this is a serious situation and now it's dangerous. Now they have a new excuse. It's dangerous to return the Golan Heights, they say, to Israel, to Syria, sorry, and the calls to reinvigorate settlement activity in the Golan Heights in order for the settlers to increase the number of settlers to reach 100,000. Now regarding Yemen, Israel expresses its joy regarding what is taking place, the Saudi American aggression on Yemen, and also it expresses its solidarity with Saudi Arabia, and it speaks, the Israeli officials speak about the necessity of establishing a strategic partnership with Saudi Arabia and the moderate Arab countries to deter the threat coming from Yemen, because some look at Yemen from different angles, but there is an Israeli eye, an Israeli angle, which says that if Yemen becomes independent, if Yemen becomes a free, independent country, a country subject to the will of the Yemeni people, then automatically Yemen is a resistance country. Yemen automatically is a part of the resistance axis, automatically is a strategic threat to Israel. And therefore, war, the war against Yemen today, is the biggest service Saudi Arabia could do for Israel. And the Israelis are happy, and it's coming for free, free of charge. Yemen's strategic position in Bab al-Mandeb, the Red Sea, regarding the military, the economic, and those who are familiar with the security issues of the region, they know what this means. They understand. Israel expresses its joy regarding the civil war spreading throughout the region. And Israel is assisting with its intelligence services under different forms. It is assisting in order to facilitate and further ignite these wars. And unfortunately, many of the countries have indeed entered into this catastrophe, and what is being prepared for in Algeria, unfortunately, and also under a sectarian theme. I don't have detailed information. I don't alleged to have a lot of detailed information, but when problems used to come up in some areas, media outlets spoke about racial disagreements, for example, Arabs and Amazigh. However, over the past few days, I saw some foreign media outlets that speak in Arabic who spoke about a conflict between Malikiyin and Abadiyin, meaning the West wants to present this conflict as being a sectarian conflict. This is what is being worked on in the region. They even reached the level at this conference, the Herzliya conference, whereby the Israelis called for an Israeli-Arab alliance in fighting terrorism. Imagine, Israel calls for an Israeli-Arab alliance to fight terrorism. Who is terrorism, according to them? It's Iran and the resistance movements. Now, in order not to make all of it so clear, they put us along with ISIL, put us together with ISIL, but they didn't speak about al-Nusra or al-Qaeda or Ansar, Bayt al-Maqdis or Boko Haram or any of these other groups. Now, Israel, the Israelis, who are hypocrites, allege that they are in solidarity with Egypt in Sinai and they are inciting in order to create confrontation between Egypt and Gaza, especially with Hamas. In Syria, Israel presents itself as a force that defends the Druze. At the same time, it provides all forms of support to al-Nusra and the Takfiri armed groups who are threatening all of the Syrians and not just the Druze. This is the hypocrisy. However, irrespective of all of the details, Israel, which is the mother of all terrorism, the source of all terrorism, and the terrorist state and the entity established by terrorist organizations, and when we speak philosophically, it is the country which is based on terrorism. Its nature is a nature of terrorism. At the same time, it presents itself as a force fighting terrorism. Look at the era which we have reached. Israel, which just 1 year ago committed the ugliest war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza, and the international reports, the international institutions, which always spoke lightly about Israel and supported Israel, weren't able to hide the facts, how many women and children they killed, the houses they destroyed, the blood spilt, the civilian blood which was spilt. At the same time, Israel comes and presents itself as a modern country and it wants to be part of an axis to fight terrorism. Of course, this is unbelievable. And nobody should be tricked, because unfortunately sometimes certain people, as a result of the terrorism they face, they might say, what do I have to do with Israel? My priority now is this terrorism that I'm facing, because the Takfiri terror which we are facing, one of the biggest menaces our region is facing, because they're not killing people based upon politics or a political project. They kill people according to their religious affiliation or their ideological affiliation or their specific religious sect. And all of the killings taking place throughout the whole region, they are on this basis. It's not based upon any political project or any political confrontation. Now, let's see in the end, who does our enemy consider to be a threat? One country poses a threat. After what happened to Syria, they took Syria out of the circle of countries that pose a threat. What remains is Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. For this reason, the Herzliya Conference, what came before it, after it, all of the Israeli focus is focused and obsessed with Iran, the Islamic Republic, the nuclear program, the development of its missile capabilities, its economic situation, its democracy, the solidarity of its people with its government, also the health status of its leader. Everything related to Iran, you find that Israel focuses on it, and Israel works on this issue inside Iran and outside Iran, and also on international podiums. The target for Israel is the Islamic Republic of Iran, and along with the Islamic Republic, the resistance movements, because according to Israel, although we highly appreciate the resistance movements and ourselves as well, we should also appreciate ourselves, regardless, the resistance movements haven't reached the level whereby they pose an existential threat to Israel. No, it's not shameful to speak the truth. Yes, the resistance movements pose a strategic threat, but they haven't reached the level whereby they pose an existential threat to Israel. Today, throughout the whole world, the entity or the country or the only presence which Israel considers to be an existential threat is the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the truth. Anyone who has something else to say, let him go ahead. So for this reason, Israel incites the whole world against Iran. America, the Congress, Netanyahu is ready to sabotage his ties with the White House to incite the Congress against Iran, inciting the Arabs and many of those Arab regimes from the beginning. That's their mindset. That's their approach. A question here. Today, this issue, if we just calm down a little, as Arabs and as Muslims, and as Palestinians, as the peoples of the region, let us just sit down. Let's put a stop to the sounds. Let's not listen to the media outlets and the fire, the bullets. Let's calm down and just ask why. Why? This whole Islamic world, 1.5 billion Muslims, the countries, the armies, and the peoples, Israel isn't afraid of anyone. It doesn't ask about anyone except for Iran. Why? Why Iran? Shouldn't this question be posed on International Al-Quds Day? Why this complete enmity towards Iran by the Zionists? Why don't we see any such anxiety or concern or fear or caution, for example, from Israel towards Saudi Arabia or towards any other Arab regime? In order for you not to say that I'm focused on Saudi Arabia only. No, just a logical, normal question posed. Today, the Arab countries, today the Arab armies, they buy worth of billions of dollars, warplanes, missiles, anti-tank weapons, long-range missiles, but there is not one thing said, nothing, not one word is said by Israel, because they are reassured, not just reassured by the written agreements, but by the Arab mindset, by the Arab official regime. They don't require American guarantees. And what has happened in the past gives us clear proof. 67 years, what did the Arabs do, most of them, to Israel? Simply speaking, because Israel realizes very well that the Arab officials, they sold Palestine and Al-Quds and the people of Palestine. Proof of this is that 67 years have passed, and now, 1 year has passed since the war on Gaza. Have the homes in Gaza been rebuilt? What's the situation of those who were wounded during the war? The siege on Gaza, the people in Gaza, what's their situation? If a small portion of the billions of dollars which are being spent in the war on Yemen and on Syria and on Iraq and the oppression of people, if a small portion of this money was spent for Gaza, wouldn't Gaza be in an acceptable situation? Aren't they part of Palestine? Aren't they part of the Ummah? And excuse me to say, and we have to say it very clearly today, aren't they part of the Sunnah? Aren't they Muslims who are fasting? Why are they being left? Because there is an official Arab decision to sell out Palestine. There is nothing called Palestine. And the Palestinians, they are standing and defending themselves in this issue. And because Israel realizes that the Takfiri project, which some Arab regimes support, this Takfiri project isn't concerned with Palestine and Al-Quds. Its fight is elsewhere. And this Takfiri project serves Israel completely, and it destroys, without Israel doing any effort, it destroys Syria and Iraq. It helps to destroy Yemen. It ignites sectarian sedition amongst most of the Muslims and the Christians, and it tears apart the Ummah, it tears apart all of the social fabric in all of our countries, and it all comes free of charge. So, who is still raising the flag I'm not speaking now just to speak highly of Iran, but in order to call for a stance to be taken. He who is still raising the flag, he who is still standing on the front lines, and he who rejects recognizing the existence of this entity, even if the nuclear talks depend on this. These nuclear talks are still continuing in Vienna. It seems that will continue. Remember that Netanyahu demanded or requested that the agreement must include a provision which includes Iran's recognition of the State of Israel. And I tell you, if the whole nuclear issue stops, if they gave Iran what it wants in the nuclear issue, if it gave Iran what Iran could ever dream of in the nuclear issue, if the condition was for Iran to recognize the existence of Israel, the Islamic Republic of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Imam Khomeini, under the leadership of Imam Khamenei, with its government and with its parliament and its people, they will not accept any such provision, because then it will mean it has left its religion. They know that is the true nature of Iran. And because Iran, which is still leading the marches, it supports the axis of resistance, the people and the political movement. It supports politically, financially, and also with weapons, and it does it out in the open. It provides its support out in the open. And this is something which nobody has the courage, or in order not to over-exaggerate, most have not had the courage to do, despite the harsh sanctions it has been suffering from over 30 years and the continuing threats of launching war and bombing its facilities. Because Iran poses such a threat to Israel and the project of American hegemony on the region, because of this, wars were waged on Iran before, and media wars and political wars and psychological and economic wars are being waged on Iran today, and tools and allies of America are participating in this war, and they were very supportive of Israel for decades. On International Al-Quds Day, allow me to be frank, to speak frankly with the Muslims, the Christians, with the Arabs, with the Palestinians, with the resistance movements, with all those who support the Palestinian cause. You cannot support Palestine except you support the Islamic Republic of Iran. And if you are an enemy of the Islamic Republic of Iran, then you are an enemy of Palestine and Al-Quds. Why? This is not an allegation, because the only remaining hope after Allah, the only remaining hope to retrieve Palestine and Al-Quds is this Islamic Republic and supporting it. And its support of the people and the resistance movements of the region, first and foremost the Palestinian people, because the world is being divided into different stances, different camps. Let's be open, let's be frank. If one should be honest, and let's set aside the hostilities, if we want to be logic, this is logic, this is logical. The enemy also agrees to what I'm saying. Nobody in Israel says otherwise regarding the Islamic Republic of Iran. Now, running away from this historic and decisive stance under the slogan of the Persian project. There's no Persian project. This is a trick to keep people away from a real ally for the Arabs and the Muslims, which is Iran. Any talk about a Safavi project, this is empty talk. Any talk about a Shia crescent. Now they accuse Iran of supporting Yemen, but the crescent changes then. The crescent was Iran, Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, but how can it reach Yemen? What kind of talk of this? These are all lies, lies invented by the Arab officials, the corrupt Arab official mindset, which abandoned Palestine and Al-Quds. And if anyone comes to extend a hand of assistance to Palestine, they will transform him to an enemy. Evidence of this is the Shah. The Shah wasn't their enemy when he was with Israel. How can we transform someone, such a group or a country, to an enemy? They say Iran is a Safavi, representing a Safavi project, a Persian project. This is number one. Now, I will speak about the region on the road to Al-Quds. In Syria, we must find a political solution in Syria. All countries that are contributing to igniting the fire in Syria by providing money, weapons, and by providing support in the media, by inciting, by preventing the Syrians from gathering together and talking, because my conviction and my information, if you put the foreign fighters aside in Syria, and if you ask the Syrian citizens themselves, even those in the armed opposition groups, after all these developments, now their own convictions, in their own convictions, all the Syrians now want a solution for their country, and they know there is no military solution. The only option is a political solution, but there are some who are preventing the political solution. Syria must rise back again on its own two feet. Some still insist on continuing the wrong adventure, and they believe that Syria will fall. These same illusions have been there for 5 years. Recently, when Idlib fell, some said that Syria has ended. They started to count down the days. But they have been counting down the days and weeks for 5 years. Don't count down the days or weeks or the months or years. Listen to me very well, and I know, and you also know. However, there are some who are behaving in a hasty way. What happened over the past few weeks, it's clear that the situation has changed. The steadfastness of the Syrian army and the popular committees in confronting the very large attacks in Dir'a, Suwaida, Al-Hasaka, Aleppo, and now the initiative is being retaken once again in Zabadani, in the outskirts of Palmyra. He who wants to topple Syria militarily, I respond by saying you won't be able to. You'll have to wage a long war. Syria is standing with steadfast, it will persevere. And those standing in support of Syria will continue to stand in support of Syria. Some, as part of their psychological war recently, they issued reports and they also spread false reports saying that Russia, that's it, Russia has changed. But it became clear after Foreign Minister Waleed Mualim visited and met with Vladimir Putin, and Vladimir Putin spoke deliberately in front of the Russian media and spoke about Russia's support towards Syria. Iran's support also towards Syria is clear. Those standing with Syria are with Syria and will remain standing with Syria. We were with Syria, we are with Syria, and we will continue to be with Syria. From the beginning, we said that we support the popular, the rightful popular demands in Syria. We support reforms. We support a political solution. However, we don't support destroying Syria. We don't support destroying the state, nor destroying its army. We don't support the Takfiri group seizing control of Syria for the sake of Syria and for the sake of Lebanon and for the sake of Palestine. And when we fight in Syria, we fight under the sun. Without hiding our presence anywhere. No. Now the situation has developed. So today, yes, every martyr which falls in Syria, every martyr we commemorate here in Lebanon is a martyr for the sake of Syria of resistance and for the sake of Lebanon and for the sake of Palestine and for the sake of the peoples of this region and for the sake of this ummah. Some said to us, or some write, they say, does the road to Al-Quds, does it pass through Junia? No. Never will the day come whereby the road to Al-Quds pass through Junia, because we are not people after authority or power. Anyway, that era had its own specific uniqueness, but today I say yes, the path to Al-Quds goes through Qalamun, Zabadani, and Homs, and Damascus, and Dir'a, and Suwaida, and Hasaka, because if Syria falls, Palestine falls, and Al-Quds is lost.
على طريق القدس أيضا في اليمن
Also, on the path to Al-Quds, we have Yemen. The Saudi-American aggression on Yemen must stop. And once again, we renew our condemnation and our strong denunciation of this aggression. And every hour and every moment, on every occasion, we in Hezbollah, we announce every time, we declare our condemnation of this brutal, irrational, inhumane aggression on Yemen and the people of Yemen. This aggression launched by Saudi Arabia and those who support Saudi Arabia. 107 days have passed since the beginning of the aggression. What's the result? Failure after failure. I don't want to take your time. You're fasting and I'm fasting. However, I think you recall. Give me the list of the goals of Operation Decisive Storm and give me what goal has been achieved. And also, please, my dear, the Operation Restoring Hope, the goals and what was achieved. You won't find anything but failure after failure. Hasn't the time come for Saudi Arabia to realize, hasn't the time come for the Saudi regime to realize that its war on Yemen no longer has any horizon and that the Saudi regime is incapable of breaking the will of the Yemeni people and that they're relying on the Takfiri groups inside the country won't lead to anything but more bloodshed and that the continuation of air bombardment will not break the will of the people who insist on independence and free and freedom and sovereignty and living in dignity. You saw the protests in Sana'a today and you heard the slogans. After 107 days of massacres, 107 days of bombardment, which didn't exclude anything, hospitals didn't spare anything. Hospitals, even in Ramadan, they go up. They know it's a marketplace. It's not like they have a Katyusha missile near the marketplace, a marketplace inside Yemen. Missiles don't reach that area, but they go up with their warplanes and they bomb. Tens of martyrs fall every day, but the people went down to the streets today and declared their stance, expressed their stance. It seems, brothers and sisters, that there are no longer any goals for the Saudi aggression on Yemen, no political goals. The only remaining goal is revenge. Revenge against Yemen and the people of Yemen. It's no longer a military operation because will the Saudi military enter? Let them protect their own positions on the borders. We hear, I don't memorize the names, they entered into the positions, the Saudis withdrew, the Yemenis then had to go back because they need air support, the warplanes come. So any country that has warplanes can commit massacres and it can go ahead with bombardment, but let your army protect its own border positions, then we can see if they are able to enter into Yemen. We're no longer witnessing a military operation or a political operation. What we are witnessing is an operation of revenge. You, the Yemeni people, you no longer are obeying the master. He considered himself to be the master, the former Yemeni president. You stop being a slave to the Saudi master. You want to be you want to decide your own fate. That's not allowed. It's not allowed for the Yemenis to be as such. So pay the price of your choice. What's the price? Killing, destruction, nothing else. This is what is taking place now. However, anyway, Saudi Arabia and the whole world must help Saudi Arabia in order for it to come down, from its stances, to abandon, to back down from its stances. And he who took the decision to defend his dignity and sovereignty and freedom, he has no choice but to defend his sovereignty. But the attacker is the one who exhausts his options. I think Saudi Arabia has exhausted its options. A few words to say about Kuwait. From now on, just a few words for every topic and we'll conclude with Lebanon. Regarding Kuwait, we must renew our condemnation for the bombings in Qatif and in Dammam. And we also condemn these bombings against in the mosques and against those who are praying in the mosques, and we caution against the danger of this issue. Previously, I didn't address this matter. Today, I won't address this due to certain issues inside Saudi Arabia, sensitivities inside Saudi Arabia. We must condemn the bombings committed against those who were praying and who were fasting in Kuwait. And we expressed our condemnation and we expressed our solidarity. However, we must also express our admiration. Kuwait, its Amir and its government and the Ummah Council, the parliament, the political factions, the social groups, the ulama, Sunnis, Shia, the media outlets and the people in general, they set a great example regarding how to deal with such issues. And I really hope that this example could be applied in all Arab and Muslim countries. I wish that we can find when a bomb or a church or a Husseiniyah or a marketplace or a school or a street is subject to such a bombing or to such a brutal attack of this kind against innocent people. I really hope we could see the leader of this country, the government, the parliamentarians, the media outlets, and the different sects showing solidarity and helping each other, an image which one cannot but salute. Why does one like this image? Why does one appreciate this? Because nobody in Kuwait, the parliament or the media or the government, according to my information regarding the media and also the factions in the Kuwaiti community or society, nobody came out and gave justifications for those who carried out the bombing. No. On the contrary, complete condemnation and complete defense. And they gained their country. What they gained was their country, because those who carried out this bombing in the mosque, they didn't carry out the bombing for political reasons. You know, even when it comes to Shia, they don't say that these are Shia with Iran or these Shia are not with Iran. They killed these people just because they're Shia. And the aim of the bombing was sectarian sedition in Kuwait to make the Kuwaiti Shia react angrily, then the Sunnis can react to react. So what the Amir of Kuwait did and what the government of Kuwait did and what the people of Kuwait and the ulama of Kuwait did, what they did was they won their country and they transformed the threat into an opportunity. The threat of sectarian sedition and sabotaging the country, they transformed it into opportunity for national unity, for national cohesion, for security fortification against these takfiri groups. We hope that this example could be witnessed and become general in the region. In Bahrain, on the contrary, instead of the regime in Bahrain from taking advantage of the threats made by ISIL, because you recall after the bombing in the Imam al-Sadiq Mosque, ISIL claimed responsibility for the bombing in Kuwait and they threatened to attack Bahrain. Instead of the Bahraini regime taking advantage of this threat and calling on the people of Bahrain to sit down together and to hold dialogue and to be together and to deal with them as brothers and in a humane way, instead of releasing the ulama and the leaders and the symbols from the prisons, and instead of saying our people, the opposition, the country is in danger, the danger is confronting all of us, let's go ahead and hold national dialogue, let's open a new page, let's put an end to the unjust verdicts issued against symbols and the leaders of the peaceful opposition in Bahrain, last of whom was Sheikh Ali Salman, the Secretary General of Al-Wifaq. Instead of doing this, no. What the Bahraini regime did was it took advantage of the threat in order to increase their hegemony and the oppression and confiscating the freedoms. But this won't lead anywhere because the Bahraini people are continuing their movements. Their turnout today in the streets regarding an issue concerning the Ummah shows their vigilance, their ideological and political vigilance. Now regarding Lebanon, to conclude with Lebanon, as I said at the beginning, Lebanon requires independent time, and maybe over the next few days, God willing, there might be an opportunity to speak in detail about Lebanon. However, I'm not committing. I will just say a little about Lebanon because we can't overlook it. A few weeks ago, it was clear that the country is heading towards a problem related to the government and also related to the political situation in general in Lebanon. A very important component in this equation was General Michel Aoun and the Free Patriotic Movement. Because we're allies, because we're in ongoing contact, because we know what the situation is, because we know what the issues are, what the promises that were given and the promises that were not kept, it was clear from our perspective that the country was heading towards a problem. In the media, we only issued a call. We issued a call for people to take issues seriously. Don't turn your backs. Don't think that things can be solved only as time passes. However, no one listened and nobody took the issue seriously. Problem. In the media, we only issued a call. We issued a call for people to take issues seriously. Don't turn your backs. Don't think that things can be solved only as time passes. However, no one listened and nobody took the issue seriously. And I believe that there was a misreading from some in Lebanon, some political factions, some concerned political factions concerned with this issue. They believed that General Aoun, he has certain demands. In our view, these are rightful demands. Of course, he's making these demands regarding the government and the cabinet. Now, regardless, aside from the other bigger issues, this requires a separate matter. We are allies, we all discuss when it comes to federalism and other matters. However, what General Aoun is proposing, these are rightful demands. Now, what did some say? They said, now the allies don't agree very much regarding the stance, so let us work between the allies. Hezbollah is preoccupied with Syria. Of course, Hezbollah doesn't want a problem in Lebanon. Let's take advantage of some gatherings here or there, and let's launch an attack on General Aoun whilst he is isolated. This is my understanding. However, this was a misreading. So for this reason, there was an insistence. We want to meet with in the government. We don't want to discuss what you want only, you or your allies. You will remain by yourselves and the government will continue and everything will continue as is. And he who will be upset, let him be upset or be angry. He who wants to leave can leave. The government will continue to function with you or without you. This was a misreading. This is what took place. It was a misreading. We didn't have to reach this stage because the only thing that was required before the cabinet meeting, the only thing required was for people to meet in the cabinet or outside the cabinet to agree once again on the framework for the government to continue to function, because then we can discuss the issue of the appointments and the authority of the president. But this didn't happen. What happened was they turned their backs. This was the mistake. So what became clear after that? What became clear is that this was a mistake, this was a misreading, and the allies of General Aoun did not abandon him, did not leave him. And they did not leave the Free Patriotic Movement. Evidence of this is what happened before, during, and after the cabinet meeting. There remained one problem. Some tried to take advantage of it. The allies of General Aoun, specifically Hezbollah, are not serious. And evidence of this is that the protests, only the Free Patriotic Movement supporters participated in the protests. Hezbollah didn't participate on the streets. Although this is a detail, but it's being worked upon. First of all, it's not in the interest of the popular movement, which wants to serve the rightful demands raised by General Aoun and the Free Patriotic Movement, it's not in their interest for Hezbollah to participate in these street protests. No, of course not. Do you know why? Because when we go down to the protests, then the issue would become the nuclear talks in Vienna, the fighting in Syria, and the international court, the Hariri Tribunal, and toppling the government. Then General Aoun and all of his demands would be lost. At the same time, General Aoun's demands are logical, realistic demands that can be met. So it is not wise, first of all, for us to participate in this street protest. Second of all, General Aoun didn't call for us, didn't request from us to participate. Should we invite ourselves? He didn't request for us to participate because he understands the nature of the responsibility Hezbollah is bearing at this current stage. It's not because he said that we didn't have a responsibility, but he understands the nature of responsibility we are assuming at this stage. So when it became clear that they are with one another, that our General Aoun's allies are standing with him, when this became clear, the Prime Minister asked, is this the stance of your allies? Because maybe the Prime Minister had a different impression. Anyway, I don't want to address the details. I don't want to say who was responsible, but with the remaining available time, I want to stress on a number of points regarding the situation in Lebanon. First of all, regarding our realization about the difficulty of electing a president in Lebanon, this issue must remain the priority of all sides. Number two, we must reach an understanding regarding a mechanism for the functioning of the current cabinet because of the unique situation with the absence of a president. The people must once again sit down. First of all, we understood there was an amendment, then we entered a new phase. I don't want to go into details. People in the next session or the one after, we must reach an understanding. I would like to stress, neither General Aoun nor any of General Aoun's allies want to obstruct the functioning of the government. Nobody should accuse us of obstructing the government. Nobody wants to topple the government. We all realize that toppling this government for any reason whatsoever means that the whole country enters into a power vacuum. And with such a regional situation, that would be very dangerous. Nobody wants to topple the government. Nobody wants to obstruct the functioning of the government. However, everyone wants the government to work in the appropriate manner and in accordance with the constitutional norms and mechanisms in a way which further enhances partnership. Now, if there are other understandings, let's reach a common understanding. Even if we don't, let's reach an agreement, because the country is going through a unique period which requires such an understanding. And evidence is that this government, how long has it been since it was formed? 1 year and 4 months, and most of its time has been during a vacuum in the presidency. Hundreds of decisions have been made by this government. Has anyone obstructed? No, because nobody has the intention of obstructing. The interests of the people, the interests of the country, the higher interests of the state require that nobody obstruct the function of the government. However, this must be done with the appropriate mechanisms in a way which guarantees partnership and reassurance amongst the components of the cabinet. Number three, this is regarding the government. Number three, we, from our perspective regarding the parliament, we have a clear stance. From the beginning of the vacuum in presidency, we in Hezbollah, in the loyalty to a resistance bloc, we didn't link between the parliament and the president. This is a stance which we might disagree, which might be one of disagreement with others. So we support the functioning of the parliament, for the parliament to be open and to function normally. Now, the normal time has ended regarding the problems which took place. We also, from the same angle, we call for opening and holding a unique session for the parliament. And we also call for all of us to sign on an agreement or sign on a document to hold a unique session and to go ahead and begin with functioning of the parliament. Now, there are certain bills, there are certain issues for some political factions that are considered a priority. Maybe during this period a dialogue could be held to see how this matter could be addressed in order to provide the appropriate number, the appropriate quota for a session to be held. We all rely and pin our hopes on what we know. We pin our hopes and rely on the wisdom of Parliament Speaker Nabih Burri. This is something which could be a subject of cooperation. The Parliament could open, the country could function. There are important bills and laws which the country needs, and this could be carried out. Number four, I call on a serious dialogue to be held. Look, we have a chance from now until the end or until after the Eid, in order for no one to lose this issue or to create a problem here or there. The matter is that there is one side called upon to address this issue, together with the Free Patriotic Movement and General Aoun. This group, this movement, it is the future movement. It is called upon. Nobody should put the problem elsewhere. Nobody should create a problem elsewhere. Because there were dialogue sessions held, there were promises made by the future movement to General Aoun. So go ahead, hold a discussion. This doesn't mean leave others outside. However, that's the real problem. We all give our opinion, the remaining components of the cabinet. However, this must be worked upon. Turning our backs won't lead anywhere. It won't lead anywhere. No, whatsoever. Relying on the passage of time also is wrong. Pinning our hopes or pinning the hopes on the capability or on the chance of isolating the Free Patriotic Movement and General Aoun from his allies, this is also wrong. I'd like to say very clearly and announce to you that we did not abandon any of our allies, and we shall not abandon our alliance and our ally, General Michel Aoun and the Free Patriotic Movement. And our options in order to preserve this alliance, our options are open. Our options are open. Nobody can say, no, that can't happen. Anything can happen. And nobody should consider that I'm threatening. I'm not threatening. I'm speaking realistically. This is how we behave with our allies. The whole country knows this is how we behave. Therefore, it would be better to go to a dialogue which begins as a bilateral dialogue between the future movement and the Free Project movement. Then we all join to further enhance it and strengthen it and legitimize it in the cabinet and the parliament in order to make the country function. Lebanon, brothers and sisters, in this historic and difficult phase, Lebanon is in need more than any before of preserving its civil peace and its political independence and its constitutional institutions and its coexistence. And there is no room for exclusion, nor for cancelling out anyone, nor for seeking revenge against anyone. It's the fate of the Lebanese.
Okay, that was Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah speaking there live in Beirut on this International Quds Day, saying Zionists have not found within the regimes of Muslims with their many weapons anything that threatens them. He said the only thing that does threaten them is Iran, because Iran has stood steadfast against Israel.